Welcome to Unstuck in the Daditari, the podcast where we're following every match that Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks have on the road to one of the highest TV rated episodes of wrestling of all time, when 18 million people watched Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks at Wembley 1981. This week, Giant Haystacks faces Gwyn Davis.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me.
The main events at the Wembley Arena, we will be seeing Giant Haystacks versus Big Daddy. Will you be doing to Big Daddy?
Well, Kent, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do to him. I'm going to show you what I'm going to do to him.
The time has come. No tag matches. When Haystacks and Daddy clutch on the mat. And
So how are you this week, Dan?
I'm doing well, mate. I'm doing well. Very excited because this is the first time we're going to see Giant Haystacks in singles action for the show. So looking forward to getting into it. How are you, buddy?
Beth's just standing in the doorway, just sort of giggling at me. So it's like, well, what do you want?
No.
What are you doing?
I've got bed now.
All right. Well, night.
Night, Beth.
Toodle pip. Yeah. So, perfect timing there from Beth. And there you go. So, yeah, that's how I am this week.
Chaos always, pal.
Chaos always. But how are you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm excited to get into this first time with the Haystacks in singles competition, and against somebody I've never really heard of in Gwyn Davis.
Yeah, the British heavyweight champion at the time, Gwyn Davis, as well.
Yeah, apparently so.
So that's interesting. But before we crack into any of that, I'm presuming you may well have cracked into a beer for this. So are you drinking, Dan?
Funnily enough, I have cracked into a beer. I'm partway through a Northern Monk Flake and Sauce Ice Cream Pale Ale, which is 5.7%, and it's bloody lovely. I can't quite tell what flavour it's supposed to be, but it's really sweet. Oh, there we are, I found it. It's a vanilla, raspberry and chocolate, which makes perfect sense. It's creamy, sweet, smooth, a little bit of tartness from the raspberry. It's bloody lovely. What are you drinking, bud?
So I am drinking Renegade Lager from Renegade Brewery. It's a 4.1% lager. The can art is brilliant. The lager is passable. Yet again seduced by Canna. I think this is a beer 52. You were saying earlier about not getting anything out of the 2.5 range. This is probably an inverse Mike Sanders, slightly below average. I've given it 2.25, but yeah, the beer did not live up to the Canna on that one, unfortunately.
Oh, well, that's a shame. It's the risky one, isn't it, with Canna? It's often promises so much and delivers so little.
It does indeed. It does indeed, yes. Yeah. So the match that we're covering today is from Lincoln Drill Hall. It was taped on the 30th of June 76 and actually broadcast on the 30th of October 76.
Wow.
And there is a reason that we'll get into that later on.
Were we involved in the production and release of that?
Well, the reason that there's so much of a delay for that is that on the 3rd of July 76, the normal programming was postponed because it's the Anthony Inoki Muhammad Ali match.
Okay.
So I think Joint Promotions, Best Royton, who promoted this venture or whatever, didn't really realise that there was going to be an interruption. So you end up with part of this taping being broadcast on the 10th of July and part broadcast on the 30th of October. And actually, within this match, Ken Walton is describing the match that in commentary happened just before that. And he's talking about John Naylor versus Bobby Ryan. And that match was broadcast on the 10th of July, 76. And this match goes out on the 30th of October and they didn't retcon it or anything. So yeah, I mean, this is weird because it's the first time there's not been joint promotions on for the wrestling. On the same show, they showed the, as I say, Inoki versus Muhammad Ali. They showed Andre the Giant versus Chuck Wepner. And the first ever WWE/WWF/WWWF match on British television. It was the WWF Tag Team Champions, the Executioners, defending against Chief J Strongbow and Billy White Wolf.
Wow, bloody hell.
Now, I can't find this match, so I don't think we can review it. It wasn't one that was on All-Star Wrestling, and it wasn't a Madison Square Gardens closed circuit match, so I don't know how we'll be able to find that or whatever. But yeah, I mean, all of Joint Promotions' plans have been thrown in the bin because of Muhammad Ali and Anthony Inoki.
The deal, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember reading something that the first sort of WWWF or WWF wrestling match on British television was thought to be a bit later than this.
Well, we covered the match in 87, didn't we? We covered the event.
Yes, when, that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so bloody hell, and this was 76.
Yeah. So, the other two matches were promoted by Georgia Championship Wrestling, but yeah, the only one that I found out in researching this, and again, all of these things come from Tony Earnshaw's We Shall Not Be Moved, which is an absolute must for late 70s British wrestling. But I wasn't expecting that, but a little twist of fate really there. So one thing I did do for the Damn Does the Job section, I looked up and found a paper that had been commenting on the Anthony Inoki Muhammad Ali match, and there was talk of that in the Lincolnshire Echo from the 1st of May 76 about that. It was talking about Muhammad Ali had just had a points decision win over Jimmy Young, and then he was going to go on and have his match, a wrestling match against Anthony Inoki.
That's amazing that it made it into the papers over here.
Yeah. So I thought, what else can we do but look at the jobs that were available in Lincoln at that time for the Dan Does the Job section.
Well, to be fair, Lincoln, not too far away from where I am. You know, it's only, you know, about an hour and a half out, 2 hours in the car.
Yeah. So in this section, we're going to give Dan the opportunity to have five jobs. He has to choose one of them. He can't swap, so if he chooses one and the next one's better, he can't change. And the 70s is a minefield for employment law, and we've seen that in the past where Dan's chosen a job that one of the protected characteristics he doesn't meet, so he wasn't able to have the job.
And it can only go well after a few ales.
It can. So the first job, and this is a part-time job, it's for a national organisation. They're saying you can beat inflation with this part-time canvassing. And they're looking for people that are pleasant and worthwhile And they say it's a highly rewarding job. Experience is not necessary as full training will be given and there's excellent rates of commission.
I am neither pleasant nor worthwhile.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So no, I'll rule myself out of that one.
Yep. The second job is a skilled tractor driver is required for a 6,000-acre arable farm growing a wide range of arable crops and grass and lucerne. I know lucerne's a town in Switzerland. I don't know if it's...
I've never heard of it as a crop, no.
Yeah, I mean, the lettering on this is all over the place as well, so I don't know if it's, some typo or whatever, for conservation. Applicants should be experienced in modern cultivation techniques, including drilling, spraying, combining, and row crop work. You get a good basic wage with ample opportunity for overtime, and you get a sound cottage adjacent to the A15 if you're successful.
I'm not an experienced tractor driver.
Well, we're assuming that you've got all these skills, because...
See, I'm just going by what I can do now, and it's not that. Ooh. I can't keep it in the back pocket and come back to it, can I?
No, you can't. And I think this is the first job that's been live-in that we've offered you on any of these series.
Yeah, it's got the digs as well.
It's near the A15.
I mean, that's the big selling point, really. You know, who can say no to the A15, he says as he frantically looks for a map of the A15.
Beth Stab would know exactly where that was. It's like got an encyclopedic knowledge of the road network.
Well, of course he would. Do you know what, funnily enough, it's a road I've probably driven several times, because the A15 is the road that goes over the Humber Bridge.
Oh, yeah, so you do like spending time in Scunthorpe.
No, I don't.
Well, I just like saying Scunthorpe.
I'll have you know I spend time in Grimsby and Cleethorpes. I'm very tempted, I have to say. Do you know what? I'll take it.
Superb. Superb. So we'll go and just explain the other jobs first. So... the beat inflation job, just so you know, there weren't any requirements on that one for the part-time sales. So you could have had that. Rapid Plastic Limited are looking for moulding machine operators. You work a three-shift system, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., 3 p.m. to 11 p.m., and 11 p.m. till 7 a.m. And some machine knowledge is desirable, but not essential.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd have been tempted by that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, so that one is candidates from either sex may apply, so that there was nothing on that one, so you could have had that one.
Okay.
Hair by Edwin for the Penthouse Saloon is looking for a qualified hairstylist, top wages plus commission, suitable.
I have a feeling, because of the time it is, that they'd be looking for a woman.
Well, no, there's no qualifications on that, so you could have had that.
Oh.
So there's three jobs that you've dismissed that you could have had.
Well, isn't that just the way?
Yeah, and there's bricklaying for HGS Langford Trading. Bricklaying around the Lincolnshire area for a grade 201 bricklayer.
I'm quite happy with what I've chosen.
So you could have had the bricklaying job, so there's no qualifications for that. So you've rejected four jobs that you were qualified for.
And I've picked the one that I wasn't.
Well, surprisingly, Lincolnshire is very progressive in the 1970s, because none of these had any requirements. You think about all these jobs that we've done on all these sections, and they've all said... You know, I've picked five jobs at random, and you could have had any of them.
I do wonder whereabouts on the A15 that cottage was, though, because once you go over the Humber Bridge, then you're into Barton-upon-Humber. But nowadays, you cut off at the M180.
So this is in Navanby.
Navenby? Where the bloody hell's Navenby? Let's have a gander. Oh, bloody hell, it's way south of where I was looking. The A15 don't stretch that far anymore.
It does.
No, it does. Oh, it picks up later on.
Oh, 15 goes... Oh, wow. I mean, the A15 goes all the way to Peterborough. So you're south of Lincoln.
Yeah, it goes that far south, but you have to get on the... Oh, right, yeah, it goes off west, I see. Next time on, Dan can't read a fucking map.
Well, it won't matter, because you're just going back and forth in that field.
Yeah, although I can't get lost there, surely.
No, I mean, what is the worst that can happen, eh?
You say that and end up with a fucking tractor upside down.
So there's a hell of a lot that happens in Brit Rest between the last match that we covered and this match that's going to be broadcast on the 30th of October. So I'm going to go through that in terms of what was happening on TV and house shows and in the wider industry. So at a house show in April on the 29th, there was a contest between Kendo Nagasaki and Giant Haystacks.
I have a feeling that Kendo Nagasaki won.
Kendo Nagasaki did win, and he won because the match was stopped due to Giant Haystacks having a cut and there was too much blood.
But yeah, okay. That's another stoppage.
Yeah, so we head over to May, and again on the house show loop, there's a match between Kendo Nagasaki and Big Daddy at Hanley, and it's a lumberjack match.
And I bet Kendo Nagasaki won.
Yeah, he did in the fourth round.
Oh, and people think Super Cena won too much.
Exactly. So on the 8th at Bellevue, there was a match between Gwyn Davis and Giant Haystacks.
Oh,
so, you know, repeat of the match that we're going to cover today, ended with Davis being disqualified in the second round.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Big homecoming for Big Daddy on the 13th of May, as he's in Halifax facing Wild Angus.
I bet he won.
Yes, he did. And Tony Earnshaw has described this as Big Daddy winning after the match was stopped in the second round from Big Daddy's no-stop belly butts.
Oh, God. Sounds about right.
Yeah, sounds about right. So we flip forward to June, and on TV, there's a match where Big Daddy meets Roy Sinclair and knocks him out in the second round with a spectacular double elbow from Big Daddy.
Not a belly bounce.
No, double elbow this time, so that is slightly different.
Involving offense, I like it.
Yeah, he's got several strings to his bow. We're back in Hanley for the house show loops, and Big Daddy beats Rex Strong, who we've seen very briefly in those clips from the advert for Motorsport.
All 7 seconds of him.
Yeah. Over in Huddersfield, Gwyn Davis beats Giant Haystacks. This time Haystacks is disqualified for refusing to break a hold in the third round.
I'm sensing a theme with these two going back and forth.
Going back and forth, indeed, yeah. The same night, over in Maidstone, there's a TV taping which Nagasaki was supposed to be there for, and he doesn't actually turn up at the TV taping. Big Daddy fails to show for the card as well, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Simultaneous car trouble or row with promoter.
Yeah, quite possibly. As we said, the 3rd of July, it's when they broadcast the Anthony Inoki-Muhammad Ali match. On the 14th of July, Giant Haystacks faces on the midweek show John Elijah and from Hemel Hempstead. And he finishes him off in the second round with a body slam and a splash.
Why do I know John Elijah's name?
We've seen him on that first episode of All Star Wrestling.
Oh, yes, that's it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was on that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. On the house shows on the 3rd of July, Rex Strong is tagging with Kendo Nagasaki against Giant Haystacks and Wild Angus.
Did Kendo win?
So it ends in disqualification because Haystacks and Angus are thrown out of the ring.
So Kendo got the moral victory.
Yeah, basically. On the 13th of July at Croydon, there's a handicap match.
Okay.
Giant Haystacks takes on Wayne Bridges and Steve Vidor, which is, you know, quite a thing because, you know, they're not jobbers. They're top of the card guys.
Yeah, they really are. And Wayne Bridges would go on to be a successful Premier League footballer.
Yeah. A different Wayne Bridges. Yeah. But Haystacks walks out in the 12th minute.
I'm thinking of Wayne Bridges. It was Michael Bridges, so it must have been his dad.
Yeah, quite possibly, quite possibly. So in August on TV, there's a change last minute to the main event when Giant Haystacks refuses to come out for a match with Kendo Nagasaki.
What's he playing at?
Yeah, so, I mean, we will later on in the series see a Kendo Giant Haystacks match, but they're sort of building anticipation up for that.
I can't wait to see how Kendo wins.
Exactly. But the following week from Bedworth, there's a match where Big Daddy, and to be fair, they're saying they booked him, you know, as a blue eye in this match against Bully Boy Ian Muir, who he beats in two rounds.
Okay, so just testing the water with Daddy then.
Yeah, they were. I mean, we've seen that across this run that they've, you know, occasionally just dipped into giving him a bit of face booking.
Yeah, and why not? I think it might pay off for him.
Yeah. On the 14th at Bellevue, there was a match between Kendo and Giant Haystacks.
Oh, right, hang on, let me think about this. Did Kendo win?
Yes, predictably.
So it's just amusing to me. I never realised Kendo had such a mammoth sort of win-loss ratio because, well, you know, like a lot of this, it's my first time seeing it. I just didn't know. Great, why not? He's booked incredibly strong.
Yeah, he is. He is indeed. On the 28th at Bellevue, Big Daddy knocks out Bully Boy Ian Muir in four rounds. For the second time, he's faced him recently.
Was that another blue eye outing for him?
He doesn't say here, so potentially he could have been in his heel role. But this is sort of, you know, on the house show loop sort of thing. So there's a bit of coverage on the 31st of August from Wolverhampton Civic Hall from The Opposition, a show that Les Kelly and Jackie Palo were on facing each other. There is some little people wrestling on this show with Skylar Law and Baby Brutus, who are managed by Bill Clark, who later on goes to be he starts wrestling as Kendo Nagasaki, but then Kendo sues him and he changes his gimmick to King Kendo and looks exactly like Kendo Nagasaki and does all the same things.
is that the 70s wrestling equivalent of Daily Motion?
Basically. But so Bill Clark manages these two little people wrestlers, and that's in kayfabe and in real life. And he refuses to pay them the same as everyone else on the show because they're just an exhibition match as they're facing each other rather than going through different competition.
And it's the 70s.
Yeah. So one of them ends up quitting. Mm-hmm. So Bill Clark thinks the best thing I can do is take out an advertisement in the Spalding Guardian for in the job section looking for a little person wrestler.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because he says that his little person wrestler has been left without a partner.
Oh, God.
Training will be provided. You must be under 4'6". And, I mean, he's paid for this advert, but he's paid for it like a shoot interview. I don't think he knows what the phrase off the record means because they've quoted him and he says Mr. Clark assures the would-be applicant there is no danger. Wrestlers don't really hurt each other.
Oh, fucking hell.
And that goes out in the paper as a quote. That he's paid to go in.
Oh, my God, what a bell end.
Yeah.
Oh, what a colossal penis.
Yeah, yeah. So... Wow. Yeah, you can't make it up. You can't make it up. It's worth going to the 5th of November edition of the Spalding Guardian to check out that resulting that came out of this.
If only I was 4'6", I could have done the job.
Oh, I just love it. Because you can just see him like saying that to the interviewer, and the interviewer went, uh-huh.
Yeah, but he should have just gone off the record.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. So another house shot on the 11th of September at Bellevue. It's a lumberjack match. It's Kendo Nagasaki and Giant Haystacks.
Okay. Kendo won.
So the match was abandoned in the third round when Haystacks had a neck lift submission on Nagasaki, and one of the lumberjacks, Kojak Kirk, so that's Mal King Kong Kirk, who's the one that died in the match with Big Daddy later on, jumps into the ring and attacks Haystacks, and then Big Daddy jumps in and attacks Nagasaki, so the match is thrown out.
But Nagasaki was ahead on points.
Yes, yeah. So we've got a match on the 23rd in Edinburgh, Kendo Nagasaki against Big Daddy.
Yeah, Kendo won.
First fall by submission. Daddy gets a submission in the third round to equalise. And then Daddy manages to pull off Kendo's mask in the fourth round.
And he's DQ'd.
No. Ooh. Kendo flees the ring without his mask. And even though it's illegal to take his mask off, and if it's not a mask versus whatever match, you know. What was that Mexican phrase?
Lucha de apuestas.
But it wasn't a Lucha de Apuestas, so they should have disqualified Big Daddy. But do you know what result they give in Edinburgh?
Draw.
Kendo is counted out and Big Daddy wins.
Bullshit. That is bullshit.
I mean, what happens on the house show loop happens on the house show loop. But this seems awfully suspicious to me because...
It does.
Because Kendo didn't win.
Yeah, that's not right. It's just not right. It feels wrong.
Yeah. So there is a match in Reading on the 28th involving Kendo and Big Daddy. Big Daddy was working double duty at this match. He'd won his earlier match with Mike Marino, and Kendo had won an earlier match against Steve Vidor. But in the fourth round, in the Daddy Nagasaki match, Steve Vidor comes in and attacks Nagasaki. And they end up the match with Big Daddy and Nagasaki working together to fight off Vidor.
That just feels wrong.
Yeah. The truce lasted exactly one evening, as the next night in Banbury, they had a match against each other and both men were counted out in the fourth round.
But Kendo Nagasaki was counted out a bit after.
But yeah, a loss and a draw. I mean, he's on bum-ass Nagasaki at this point. Nagasaki in the dirt.
Yeah.
So we're over on TV in October. There was a match where Big Daddy took on Eric Tubby Hodgson, who was making his TV debut. He'd previously been known as Vince Apollo he wore a mask in the tag team The Undertakers, but he didn't last very long, losing in the second round to Daddy.
Fair enough. Was he a proper, like, trade description Undertaker?
No, I don't think he was Bob Sapp. I think he was more Mark Calloway.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. On the 23rd of October at Wolverhampton, there's a match where Kendo Nagasaki defeats British heavyweight champion Glyn Davis.
But he didn't win the title.
after the match, because this was a non-title match, after the match, Gorgeous George presents a petition of over 1,000 signatures demanding that Kendo Nagasaki gets a British heavyweight title match.
I should have done that before the match, the fucking idiot.
You should have done, it was too late. he mucked his ticket there, didn't he? But I do wonder, you know, given that this match was filmed a long, long time ago and now it's been slotted in, if this match was put in to give some context to the Nagasaki situation.
Could well be.
Yeah, on the halls on the 5th of October, Giant Haystacks, Big Bruno, Steve Vidor and Wayne Bridges are involved in a tournament. Giant Haystacks and Big Bruno are eliminated. Then on the 9th in Hanley, Big Daddy and Kendo Nagasaki are partners. They're tagging together against Malkin, Conkirk and Bully Boy Muir. So Mia was replaced at the last minute by Gil Singh. The match ends in two straight falls for Nagasaki and Daddy.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And I've kind of lost my thread with it. Were they? Do you know if they were face or heel at this time?
They were heel. Well, Nagasaki's certainly on this run, yeah. A heel. The following night at Bellevue, they're actually facing each other. On different sides. Nagasaki's tagging with Kojak Kirk and Daddy's tagging with Giant Haystacks. And obviously Nagasaki goes on and wins.
As is the natural order of things.
Yeah. And then a weird experience on the 29th of October, Kendo Nagasaki is in Liverpool and fans are cheering for him. He's tagging with Count Bartelli, the other famous masked wrestler who he won the mask off. Yeah. And they're taking on Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks. A fierce reaction for them. Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks are disqualified after 12 minutes.
Because they couldn't be fucked anymore.
Yeah. Gorgeous George takes the microphone at the end and everyone cheers him. So, a bit bizarre. One night only face turn for Nagasaki.
Why not? Liverpool is the original bizarro land.
Yeah, so a hell of a lot of stuff happening there and all the weird and wacky. I can't believe Bill Clark.
Yeah, proper weird, that, isn't it?
Just like, why would he do that? Why would he pay for a shoot interview and then shit on the business? In the job section.
Because he's a penis. Christ almighty.
Yeah, so from this card in Lincoln, the matches that go out on the 10th of July 76, there's John Naylor versus Bobby Ryan. It ends with John Naylor winning in the first round. Naylor's from Wigan and he was in one cup final match in 75. This match is on YouTube. I have watched it. It does suffer from A, very poor sound quality, and B, it's sort of mashed together from several people's recordings, and can short play and long play stuff. So it's very much pieced together.
It doesn't sound fun.
No, it doesn't. Burt Royal versus Sid Cooper. Burt Royal, I mean, we've covered him before on several shows, four cup final appearances versus Sid Cooper with one cup final appearance. And the final match is Marty Jones, who wins 2-0 against Mark Rocco. And we will see Mark Rocco because in 1979, he's Big Daddy's cup final opponent because it's Big Daddy, Bigby versus John Quinn and Mark Rocco.
I can get on board with that. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm a massive John Quinn fan, so that'll be really good. And we get to look at that Radio Times article about John Quinn's diet.
Oh, can't wait. That's superb.
Yeah. On this episode that went out on the 30th of October from the other half of the card, that presumably would have gone out instead of the Muhammad Ali Anthony Inoki match, Dynamite Kid versus Bradford's Alan Dennison.
Good.
Yeah, it is good. And then Peter Kay, not that one, versus Mick McMichael. And we will see Mick McMichael because, depending on how far we go, he is the 1985 Big Daddy tag team partner for a match against Pete LePuec and Tommy Lawn.
Is that Mongo's distant uncle?
Possibly. Yeah, so quite a lot of daddy interaction. But, it sounded like a decent card for that whole event.
That sounded so wrong, quite a lot of daddy interaction.
There was a lot of daddy interaction.
Oh, dear. Sorry, it's getting late in the day. Me silly's coming out, as they say on Morty and Fitch.
I do think one interesting note, because Brian Crabtree is the referee for all these matches, and he wears the red and blue classic half and half shirt that we saw on IE Being Served that the referees wore in World of Sport. And he wears that for the Neil Orion match and the Haystacks Davis match. And then the other matches, he's wearing like a white shirt with one red sleeve and one blue sleeve. So he's obviously changed his shirt halfway through to make it look like he's different.
Oh, fair enough. It's a nice touch, if they're going to be broadcast on different days.
Yeah. Although he's fucked it because of the six matches and he's only worn one shirt for two and the other for four.
He's trying his best.
He's trying his best. So as you said, the promoter's Best Royton. The announcer's Neil Snowden. I couldn't find anything on him, to be honest.
A mountain of a man.
Did you know anything about Gwyn Davis at all?
Well, here's the problem, right? I was doing my notes. I was trying to find anything on Gwyn Davis. And every time I went on Wrestling Heritage and tried to search the wrestlers and go from A to G, it came up with a bad portal. I tried to go to the new domain name, which was wrestlingheritage.com. Went on the wrestler pages, and I got directed back to the same bad domain name. However, spoiler alert: we do odd recordings back to back, and we talk about the beer order of episodes. I do have a bit on Gwyn Davis right in front of me. But I'm going to have a quick scan through and just give you the Cliff Notes version from Wrestling Heritage, because for some reason, it's worked on my phone.
So just to say, by the time this goes out, wrestlingheritage.co.uk will have moved to wrestlingheritage.com. It will have reduced the amount of content because of the web hosting that it's got. I've spent the last 3 weeks doing an insane amount of research to have that stuff in the bank for when it goes.
I appreciate that, because I'm pretty sure you told me about it and I just clean forgotten.
I will send you a copy of that when I've cleaned it up.
because that's how my brain works. But one thing I have noticed is just having a scan through Gwyn Davis and his career, that they talk a lot about him being a villain. And in the match that we're going to look at today, he was very much the blue eye. They talk about how his artistry in being a villain, and there's a quote from somebody who watched Gwyn Davis wrestle Steve Vidor in Royal Albert Hall in May 76, and they said, "I was only 7 years old at the time. I found the violence and blood pouring from Vidor's mouth disturbing. Watching it again 30 years later, what a sensational bout it was, action packed from start to finish." And obviously Gwyn Davis was part of that, so just from that alone, I would love to see more of Davis, because he was a big man. He was 6'5", 18 stone 4 in this match, and he looked tiny next to Haystacks. I've actually got in my notes that Davis looked like looked like a Welsh Bob Backlund.
Yeah, but significantly bigger than Backlund.
Yes, significantly bigger. And at this point, he was 41 years old. He was born in Maesteg in South Wales. In 1935, and 41 nowadays isn't old for a wrestler at all. Back then, it was, I suppose, it was sort of touch and go, really. I just realised I have no concept, I have no reference for the age of most wrestlers in that time, or what the average age was. You can maybe better direct me on that, Rob.
It's a funny one because Kellett would have been 51 at this point. 51. Yeah,
around about that. Gwyn Davis, his family have a background in rugby league. His father, Jim, was a forward for Dewsbury, which is where he spent a lot of his time, and he also played for Wakefield Trinity back in the late 30s.
One of the finest men that ever breathed.
Well, because he was in Wakefield.
Yes.
Yeah. But rugby was part of Gwyn Davis's childhood. At 14 years old, he was 6 foot two, and he was captain of the school's rugby team, which gives you an idea of the stature of the man. Yeah, to be honest, there's a lot to chew through here, and I think I'd be doing him a disservice, you know, trying to go sort of through his life. But he was called up to serve in the army at 18, when he was 18 in 1953. He was in the York King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, stationed at Strensel Barracks, which isn't too far from me in York. Hell of a background. As I'm looking through now, he also played rugby for Chester.
Yes.
Which is another one of my old haunts, because I went to university there. So yeah, it's kind of odd how many times he's touched places that were close to me. But I dare say that you have a bit more on him.
So one of the things was Gwyn Davis's father also went into wrestling.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So he, at the end of his rugby career, starts wrestling, and starts wrestling for Normal Moral, etc. And he gives Gwyn Davis a bit of wrestling training, but needs to send him to sort of wrestling training finishing school. And obviously, you know, by this point, you know, he's moved over for when he played for Dewsbury. And then he's moved to Wakefield, probably didn't even move house for there. It's only about 5 miles between the grounds. And the finishing school he sends him to is Eric Taylor's wrestling school in Bradford. So despite Gwyn Davis being born in Mystag and being promoted as this great Welsh wrestler, again, very much in the vein of Sandy Orford, another great Welsh wrestler, has a Bradford wrestling car running right through him.
It always comes back to Bradford.
Well, but even in these places that you wouldn't really expect, you know, and I think that's perhaps...
Oh, yeah, well, I wasn't mocking when I said that. It really does always come back to Bradford in wrestling.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So, you know, this is one of the sort of three big wrestling training schools in Bradford that is going to the Taylors. Obviously, Dave Taylor, that goes on to train in NXT, is part of that lineage, you know, going on from there. So he's got that background to him. At this point, he's on his third British title reign. He'd lost the title to Albert Wall, and then Albert Wall had quote-unquote retired. And by quote-unquote retired, that means he'd gone to All-Star Wrestling and taken the title with him. So then you end up with a bit of disputed title history between the joint promotions, British Heavyweight Champion, and the All-Stars British Heavyweight Champion. And then he properly retires in All-Stars. Gwyn Davis wins the vacant British Heavyweight Championship, and that's where we're at now. Or not, obviously. You know, certainly on TV time is being made to look as if he's got Kendo biting his heels.
Sorry, just to go back a little bit, I've just been reading here that in April 1970, so 6 years prior, Billy Robinson was heading off into the sunset and leaving the British Heavyweight Championship vacant. And apparently at that time there was a lot of fan expectation that Gwyn Davies would be the one challenging.
Yeah,
that's amazing. But I've seen as well, there was a quote from a fellow called Frank Thomas, and it's about him wrestling Shirley Crabtree in the pre-Big Daddy days.
All right.
Which I thought was pretty interesting. I saw Gwyn in his heel phase give out some stick to Shirley Crabtree pre-Big Daddy. Shirley was working as a heel then, and for one night, Gwyn was the goodie, so to speak, until he hit Shirley during the introductions, broke every rule in the book. The crowd got on Shirley's side and he won by disqualification. So he took a situation where he should have been the face and just turned it around completely.
Yeah.
Which is a real talent in wrestling and speaks to how good Gwyn Davis was. And I would love to see some of his heel work.
Yeah, we might have to check that out. I'm not sure if we see him too much more in this run with Daddy and Haystacks, but we could go off and independently have a look.
Yeah, I think we should. But getting into tonight, just before we go into the match, I'll give you my giant hair fact.
Yeah.
Which is from Wrestling Heritage, and it's a quote from one of his sons. And I've not been able to verify this on any other source, but I will take it as gospel in that on one of his tours to India, Giant Haystacks once wrestled in front of a crowd of 100,000.
Wow. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. And the thing is, I can believe it. You know, back then, speaking as a larger gentleman who has travelled in China, I've got some funny looks. I've had my picture taken, and I've felt like the centre of attention when I really shouldn't be. You know, because I'm obviously over there, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm looking at all this amazing stuff, and yet there's people there who are more interested in taking a photo of or with me than the incredible architecture or whatever site we're there to see. So I really do fully believe that in India in the 70s, somebody like Giant Haystacks, who was an enormous man, would have drawn that kind of crowd.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was a mammoth of a man. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so there were a crowd of 100,000. But for, I dare say there was less than that in the venue tonight.
Yes. Yeah, they couldn't fit 100,000 into Lincoln Drill Hall. So, pre-match, Kent Walton's talking about the match that's just happened, Naylor versus Ryan, which is broadcast on the 10th of July.
Brilliant, love it.
Yeah. Haystack sort of swats Crabtree away as he's going through the pre-match checks.
Yeah, he just kind of lazily hangs a leg out and then waves him off, doesn't he?
He does, yeah, yeah.
But we do find out that it's 8 5-minute rounds, best 2 out of 3 falls. And Kent Walton calls it a super heavyweight contest.
Yeah, so I think they did actually have weight limits in the Mount Evan rules, and I'm guessing 18 stone falls above the top bracket.
I would have thought so, because you know, the boxing heavyweight limit, or the lower limit, is 14 stone 4.
Yeah.
So it kind of follows on that wrestling would take that and think anything above 18 falls the super heavyweight.
Yeah, it makes sense. So at the start of the match, Haystacks is refusing to let go of the top rope and he's shouting at the crowd.
Yeah, now, it's a funny thing because I've seen this for a bit from Haystacks before, but Kent Walton makes it make sense. Because he's there saying, as long as Haystacks has the rope, Davies can't attack him.
Yes.
So it's really painting Davies as the good guy, which is completely odds with what I've just read about him being a great heel. It doesn't make for great television, just Haystacks wandering, you know, sort of lollicking around and holding the top rope. But Walton makes it at least make sense.
Yeah, Walton's saying he's very worried about the top rope with 49 stone of wrestlers being in there if they both hit at the same time.
Which is a fair concern. It could just ping off.
Yeah. Davis grabs a wrist lock and we get a woo from the crowd. I mean, the reactions that we've had from the crowd, they're already better than walking.
Yeah, they are, yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed this crowd, and we'll get into why later on, but they were definitely there to be entertained and to get into the show.
Yeah. Davis threatens to try a gym break special. I don't know if you saw that, where he puts his arm under the armpit sort of thing. And I'm who the fuck's going to do a gym break special to Giant Haystacks?
Well, someone who's 6'5" and 18 stone can give it a good go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit ambitious.
Yeah, it was. Which actually, when I saw that move, was what got me into the rabbit hole of Bradford training.
Right.
But obviously, Jim Breaks doesn't come up through the tailors. So, yeah, so Stacks is, he grabs the top rope and he's taunting the crowd. He tries to do this sort of sleeper at him, on him, but he's... Davis is facing him, and he's sort of pulling him into his chest.
I watched a bit of this with my brother, And right. We saw this hold, and I called it the aggressive motorboat. Because that's what it was. He's just, he had his face just in Haystacks' sweaty cleavage, basically. It's fair to say that this was a somewhat slow-paced match, and there wasn't a vast amount of action in the first round.
No.
Until the very end, in fairness, but it was neither man wrestling who was the star of the first round.
No. I mean, Haystacks is sort of using the opportunity to pull Davis's hair, and the crowd are chanting that it's cheating. We get a Men and Motors break, so this probably wasn't the ITV break. Haystacks sort of turns away from Crabtree so he can do the close fist punch out of the sight of the ref.
Mm. Which I still like. I think that's brilliant. The funny thing is, I bet this match live was a lot better than it was on TV.
In sort of real time, we've just recorded, before we've done this, the first Impact Wrestling. And I talked about watching it that three times and becoming less impressed with the match with every watch.
Mm.
I've watched this match several times. I've probably watched it like six times in my life. And, first time I thought it was awful. And I'm warming up to it as I go through. Stockholm syndromed myself with this match.
I was just about to say, because we'll come to it towards the end, but this wasn't good. It wasn't a massively fun watch.
I honestly didn't think it was, but I tell you what I really do like about this match compared to that last match we watched from working, the crowd are really invested and that really helps.
And that's why I say I think this match was better live than on TV.
Yeah,
because the live crowd saw enough to get involved, and they really do get involved. But as far as the first match goes, apart from some decent heel work from Haystacks with the pulling of the hair and the hidden punch, the best bit is when Davis gets pissed off and grabs Haystacks' beard, the referee's trying to separate him and eventually just takes a running jump to break the hold and accidentally causes Davis to rip out some of Haystacks' beard.
Yeah. And Davis is sort of looking at his hands as if he's got like beard hair in him.
Yeah, and then that's towards the end of the first round. The only other thing that happens after that is that Davis, I think he seems to use the ropes to somehow knock Haystacks in the cock. So we've got an overly enthusiastic referee and a hint of a dick punch or a hint of penis violence. And that's it for round one.
Yeah.
It's, as much as I enjoy a good shot to the crotch, seeing that happen to somebody else, I should say, it wasn't quite enough to make me really enjoy that first round.
No, and I completely get it, because when I was going to make notes for it the final time, I was just thinking, oh, God, it's just that bloody waterboarding or whatever you called it.
The aggressive motorboat.
Yeah,
and that's what it was, It's uneventful between rounds, which is fine, because that's what they're there for. But then the second round, it's a side headlock.
How vigorously Davis's second was toweling him down.
he was on point, was that lad.
Yeah.
But, it starts and it's a bit of a shoving match, a side headlock, a sneaky punch. A sort of a sleeper. Kent Walton calls for a public warning. The referee gives it. Haystacks goes back to the aggressive motorboat, and we get a call. We get a good call from Kent Walton. Not too many orthodox wrestling holds. And there's a whip to the corner, a slam and a splash, and Haystacks is one up, which is fine. I don't mind Haystacks doing things like that, because you don't need. You don't need Haystacks to be in a long match.
No, you don't. Davis takes forever to get up.
He's really selling it.
Yeah. The announcer confirms the first fall and get the boo from the crowd. The seconds are scraping Davis off the mat.
Did you see Haystacks give the crowd the twos up?
Yeah, he flicks the V's.
Yeah. And that's the best thing that's happened all show.
We get an audience member throwing a paper cup, but it doesn't make it as far as the ring.
Yeah, that was funny. But they were angry enough to throw it, which says a lot.
Yeah.
But then round three starts, and we're straight back to the aggressive motorboat.
Yeah, the head boobs move, as I put in that.
The Greco-Roman tits mother. Yeah, but at least with this, you know, we get it looks like Haystacks is going to do the same thing again. There's a bit of a whip. He has a big club to the back, but he misses the splash. And one thing I do like that's coming out through these episodes, I do like it when they go for the crossbody and they're selling it that the person launching themselves is like fighting to try and press them down. It makes no sense, but I love it.
Well, at least they're doing something, you know?
Yeah.
And he does force him down, and it's a bit far, but he sort of wraps his legs round the arms and his arms round, arms round one arm and legs round the other, and he gets a three count. We get a massive pop, and we get an easy chant. And this blew my mind, because I thought that was a dad.
It's weird, wasn't it? That daddy obviously took that on later in his career, but it was bizarre. But what I loved is the crowd were up and they were banging the apron.
Yeah,
In support. That was fantastic. Again, just really great to see that kind of crowd.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the crowd were the stars of this match.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
And in round one, it was Max Crabtree.
Yeah. So in the fourth round, Davis is trying to grab Haystacks, but is holding the ropes. Haystacks offers the hand, and there are people in the crowd doing the Daniel Bryan, no, no, no.
Yeah. And they were right. But what a great thing. Again, like I say, it must have been so good live.
Oh, yeah. There's so much of this match that you think is more modern than 76, but it's happening in 76.
Yeah, it's brilliant. There are certain aspects to this match that are brilliant.
Yeah. But did you see Davis went for a curb breaker?
No, I didn't clock that.
Yeah, he jumps up and like double knee to the face and holding the back, but Haystacks sort of shoves him off.
Oh, yes, I do have that. I do have that, yeah.
Yeah, a cord breaker in 1976.
Oh, God. Right, so you're going to AEW this weekend. Jericho versus Ospreay.
Yeah.
when Jericho hits his cord breaker, just shout as loud as you can, you nicked that off Gwyn Davis, you bastard.
Yeah, well, as long as he straps on a Patagonian nose hold afterwards.
I'll be keeping an eye out tomorrow night when I go to True Grit. I'll let you know if Wing Commander Nash breaks it out.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, brilliant.
God, yeah. One thing I did love in this match, and it's a bit of a heelish move which speaks to Davis's roots, but he tied Giant Haystack's hair to the top rope.
Yes.
And then used the momentum of the ropes. Yeah, exactly. You know, to rip his hair out. And you've just got Kent Walton there just you know, on his level as Kent Walton. He's just, well, he's lost some of his beard and he's lost some of his hair now. Borderline no-selling him, to be fair. Just after that, we get Haystacks going for the nerve hold, but it's countered by the Lord Mount Evans beard hold.
Yeah.
The ref trying to get in the middle again. I love it. It tickles the piss out of me every time I see somebody try and go for a headbutt to the midsection on Daddy or Haystacks.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like almost a headbutt / spear, isn't it? And it bounces us off Stack's belly.
Yeah. Yeah, it was mad. But see, the ending of this match is a little bit bullshit for me, because Haystacks does a splash, then he does a second one, and he gets a second public warning. And the crowd are up booing, but then it's, oh, wait, no, he's actually disqualified.
Yeah, they didn't know what they were doing. I guess, you know, in sort of the Lord Mount Evans rules, you're supposed to not do something once you've relinquished the hold. That, I guess, they sort of count that, you know, if you do a body slam and then splash them, that's counted as one movement. But it's like, it's almost like the offside rule, second phase of play.
Yeah. Or like a double movement in rugby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose so. It just felt a bit dodgy. And I don't mean that in terms of the rules, I just mean in terms of it felt like they were fitting the rules to the timing, if that makes sense. It's like, well, we'll go with this interpretation and it'll be fine.
Yeah, and I get that. And I wonder if the shuffling around of this match was, you know, Gwyn Davis has lost to Nagasaki and, you know, George Gillette's demanding a British title match. And then they've put this in. And for all that there were moments in this match, you know, it's Gwyn Davis has won this match on his back.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this is to... that they thought, right, well, we've got this in the bank. We know what's happened with Kendo. We're going to sow the seed with the audience that Davis is teetering, you know, just hot sort of thing and ripe for the picking.
Could well be. Yeah, that would make sense.
So, yeah, I wonder if there was a bit of making salad out of chicken you-know-what there.
Yeah, it's a victim of circumstance.
Yeah. So how do you think Giant Haystacks looked in this match?
Well, he looks strong, but he always looks strong because he's fucking massive. It's a difficult one because I can't say he looked bad because he took the British heavyweight champion to the limit effectively. But it was just very plodding and a little bit dull in places.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is.
On the flip side, because you know, I know the next question, you know, it's how did the opponent look? And again, Davis looked good in places because he's standing up to Daddy. You know, he's a big guy, but he's still the smaller man in the match. You know, and he was standing up to Haystacks. He was standing up to him, so that was good for Davis. But I don't know. I guess he got a little bit more out of it than Haystacks did.
Yeah. I think in my notes, how did Davies look? Not 6'5".
Yeah. The problem is, I think we've been a bit spoiled in that Daddy at his size could still throw himself about.
Yeah.
And just from a practicality standpoint, and we're never going to see that from Haystacks, I don't think.
I think the first few times I watched this match, I couldn't get over the fact that Haystacks was kind of, I don't know, bringing down Gwyn Davis. And it's only sort of later that I've noticed some of the nuances and the endearing qualities of the match and the, you know, the crowd reaction and everything else.
Yeah. And I do fully get that. I do. Which is why I've got the proviso on it that it must have been better live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would have been a lot of fun live. So what did you think about what they were wearing?
Well, Haystacks was Haystacks and Davies was, like I said before, Welsh Bob Backlund, pretty nondescript.
Yeah, with a Don Revy top on. Did you get a chance to have a look at the heavyweight championship belt?
Not in great detail, but it looked nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I've tried to find pictures of it on YouTube and Google or whatever, and you can't really get a decent view of it. But yeah, it did look decent from what we could see.
Nice enough.
Yeah. So, what do you think about the Lincoln crowd?
They were great. They were really on point, giving it the easy chance. They're up pounding on the ring at any opportunity. Can't fault them at all. Great crowd.
Yeah, I mean, this was so refreshing after working.
Yeah, it really was.
really was. So what's your Kent Walton moment of the night?
Oh, it's when he's just giving it not too many scientific wrestling holds. It's like, do you really expect him? Come on, Kent, you've seen enough Giant Haystack matches.
Yeah. I just loved that, you know, after Crabtree, like, jumps across the arms and Ken Walton's going, Davis has a handful of hair from Haystack's beard.
That was good as well. I did enjoy that.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've not been feeling it so far, but are you feeling any hype yet for Daddy Haystacks?
I'm actually less hyped. It took a bit of the wind out of the sails. I miss Big Daddy.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose you need a monster or whatever, but yeah, it's. I'm much more hyped about Daddy than I am about Haystacks with these watches. It was nice to see some flashes from Davies. I think we need to watch some more of him. It's not as bad as I first thought, is probably what I'd say about this.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. When I say that this is the worst match we've seen so far in this series, it is. But there's some caveats. Longer matches do Haystacks no favours. But I can see why Davies is champ. He's got some good fire. And it must have been nice for him for once to play the smaller man. And as I say, as I keep saying, this crowd saw something in it to get really fired up about. So maybe it's one of those matches that TV does no favours.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, certainly the crowd wasn't the worst crowd we've seen. The crowd was very good.
Oh, no, I'm talking bell, you know, bell to bell to bell to bell.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, it kind of was what it was. And, you know, I guess it's worth watching for the sake of watching. It's not a classic in terms of what we've seen so far, which is a shame. But you've got to take the rough with the smooth, really, with it. But it was interesting, that period of history and all that stuff that happened in the last two matches, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was always going to be a drop-off eventually.
Yeah.
We couldn't keep having banger matches.
No, we could not. We could not. So next time on Stacking the Dadatory, we are heading to the home of British wrestling.
Bradford,
St. George's Hall, where we will see Giant Haystacks versus Kendo Nagasaki.
Can't wait to see how Nagasaki wins.
Yeah, unfortunately, that'll be the last time we see Nagasaki in this run, I believe. Yeah, it's a shame because we've loved a bit of Kendo on the show, but yeah, it's a shame we had to get through his involvement so quickly, really. There you go. Just remember that we didn't talk about what else was on TV that day on the 30th of October 1976.
Well, bugger, what was on?
Well, there's not much jumping out of me on ITV. But if we head over to the Beeb.
Yep.
At 6:05, Tom Baker is starring in The Deadly Assassin Part 4.
Hey, and we've covered that on the Doctor Who pod.
Yeah, so if you want to see Peter Pratt being a crusty master.
Yeah, with yoghurt pots for eyes.
Yeah, and hear Dan review that, then jump on over there. 7:25, MASH was on, so I'd have been happy away watching MASH later on. It looks like it's an early one as Wayne Rogers is in it, but yeah, I still listen to Alan Alda's podcast to this day, so, you know, God, he must be in his 90s.
I've never watched MASH.
Oh, you need to watch MASH. The film's not so good, but the TV series is good. Yeah, and at 9 o'clock on BBC Two, Starsky and Hutch.
Oh, wow. Proper throwback.
Yeah, yeah. So a couple of decent bits.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
Not the worst. So where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at DanGriffin21, usually tweeting about wrestling that's a minimum 6 weeks out of date, or movies that are 25 years out of date. If you want to hear more of me talking about stuff, head over to SJP World Media, where you can hear me on the Doctor Who pod with Cy Powell, usually tweeting about wrestling that's a minimum... No, wait, that was my other thing. I got caught in a loop there. Fucking hell, I'm turning into Marty and Fitch. Head over to SJP World Media, where you can hear me on the Doctor Who pod with Cy Powell, where we look at one serial or episode per Doctor per series, seeing what lands for me with the classic Who stuff as a modern Who fan and the reverse for Cy. And you can hear me on The Volley, where we do live alternate Premier League commentary, and we'll no doubt be branching out into Europa League, Champions League, and whatever cup competitions come along. And that's with the magnificent Matt Lewis and Connor from at Connor Knows Footy.
So you can follow me at UTT Rob. It's really more about the mutual than about the followers. So I'm absolutely more than happy to follow back. On the same channel that listens to this, you can hear the One Man's Meat podcast with Danny at Scottish Juggalo and the real Chris Bellis. And they're going through the forgotten storylines of wrestling. Wrestlers that might not get that much love, that kind of thing. At time of recording, they do have an upcoming second series of Cold Cuts, but they've sworn us to secrecy about what that's about. But if you go over there, you're guaranteed to get some well-researched and funny content. So definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, and do more disgusting awful, please.
Yeah, no, they do really well with that, really well-researched.
Yeah, it's all about horror movies.
Yeah, in terms of our own side projects, aside from this, we've currently got Kellett Club, where we're following the ups and downs of the in-ring career of legitimately one of the hardest men that ever lived, the Clown King of British wrestling, Les Kellett. And prior to that, we were following legitimately one of the hardest men that ever lived, one David Tank Abbott. And if you go to the Twitter for that, at UTT Tank, you can get some hashtag Tank Facts.
They will never die.
Tank Abbott knows what's inside Shane McMahon's lockbox.
But he doesn't want anybody else to know.
Tank Abbott can grow a full beard in an afternoon.
And that's when he's not trying.
It's actually more of a hindrance than a skill. And King Arthur was only able to pull the sword out of the stone after Tank Abbott loosened it for him.
You say that, I'm pretty sure Tank actually pulled it out and then put it back.
Yes.
He just thought, I'll leave it better for the next guy.
That's exactly what happened.
Because being king didn't pay enough.
So on the main show at UTT Podcast, we are covering first and lasts of wrestling, so debuts, finales, that kind of thing. So, again, really worth checking out. So all that we need to do now is choose what song we're going to end this show with.
Oh, no doubt you've got some picked out that'll see us out, Rob, after I stole your thunder last time.
Well, I mean, you know, this show, we're building to FA Cup finals, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we should, you know, have an FA Cup final song. In fact, we'll have a B-side to an FA Cup final song.
Deep cut.
We'll have the Liverpool squad for the 1977 FA Cup final singing Big Daddy's theme, We Shall Not Be Moved.
Get in, I'm all over that. Love it.
So next time, as we say, Giant Haystacks is fighting Kendo Nagasaki. I don't rate his chances too highly.
No, because nobody beats Kendo.
Yeah, and even when they do, we think it's a misprint in the book.
Exactly. I think Kendo ranks up there with Les Kellett and Tank Abbott.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I would say we should do an unbooking the Kendo Atari, but considering some of the other projects we have in, I think just by coincidence, we end up covering most of Kendo's matches.
Yeah, I wonder how that could have come about, eh, Rob?
Yeah. Well, no, this wasn't planned.
Sure it wasn't.
Well, you want to do the Regal one.
Okay.
Yeah, so if we do William Regal's first and last, his last match in World of Sport.
Well, we don't have to do it all. We don't have to do all the last ones. We didn't do it for Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, but you have to do it against the big opponents.
Yeah, this is true, yes. Yeah. We will get to that.
Yeah, we will indeed. But in the meantime, thank you for listening.